as a little boy, I believed in God. Well, sort of, you know what I mean? I sort of believed in God, but it was a sort of very selfish type relationship, really, you know. I'd say to God, I'll say my prayers if you do this for me. Or, you know, it's sort of that sort of arrangement. So it was more about me than about God. That was as a young boy. I don't know where that came from, because my parents were churchgoers at all. My dad had been till he was 18 years old and then packed it in completely. My grandmother was a believer, but that was all. I didn't know much about it at all. Anyway, as a youngster, that's my sort of, I think I sort of strengthened it by singing. I like music, and I learned to play the mandolin and the guitar from a hymn book, of all things, believe it or not. But anyway, that's where it was. God was sort of there, but it was my sort of on my terms. It's so much so that by the time I was 12, I went along to as young lads can do this. We went along to one of these little chapel things, church places at the end of the street. It was a Pentecostal place, and we'd seen them build this thing, and we went along as youngsters too. You know, see what was going on, create a bit of aggravation if possible, sort of thing. You know? And the nice thing was that the seats in the chapel had been the seats that were in the cinema that were in the town originally. You know, those black seats. It was good, yeah. So a bit familiarity. And the seats were there, we're sitting on there. And I can remember one particular occasion where the old guy, well, he wasn't that old, but he seemed old to us, you know. The old guy said to us, group of lads, you've got to give your life to Jesus. Right? He's trying to tell us about God wanting to change our lives and save us, you know. Anyway, I didn't say anything, but I sat there and I thought to myself, it's my life, I'll do what I like with it. Right? So you're not getting me to go on this God business sort of thing, you know. So that was how it was with God. He was in a compartment in my life, but I carried on as normal. Well, I finished up at school, well, I was at school before that, but at the grammar school, I got transferred there eventually. At the grammar school, I really got stuck into science. Really loved science, you know. Biology, physics, chemistry, great, fantastic. And it was in the sixth form, I got speaking to, we had a conversation with our physics teacher. It was a really good physics teacher, a really nice guy. Mr. Parkinson, his name was. And he got into conversation. We were on about God. And he was an atheist. He was a nice, gentle guy about it all. And he was talking about, and he said, basically, the idea is that people have God to explain things that they can't understand. You know what I mean? Yeah. So God's the God of the mysteries. Right? So he says, basically, what happens is, as science gets to know more things, God of the gaps gets smaller. Because God's in the gaps bit, the bits you don't understand. And, well, sounded ish sort of thing to me, you know. And as one does, one puts it in the compartment, and that's how it was for many years, you know. I finished up going to Cambridge University and studied natural sciences, and at the end of that, well, we did biology and all sorts of things, but at the end of my course I was doing a course in genetics. Well, you can't get more evolutionary than that, can you? This was the college where, or the university where Darwin started out, you know, his theories and so on. And so, basically, we came up with the ideas, and I was well ingrained with these, the ideas that life started by some sort of chemical reaction a long time ago, this single living thing eventually adapted and developed into all sorts of life forms that we have now. That's the basic story, you know? Life started as a chemical reaction somewhere in some ocean somewhere, or whatever it was, and from there on, the things have just evolved to produce all that we are. That's the basic idea, and that's how it was, and I thought, basically you think this, well, we're here, that's, if they say that's how it was, well, I suppose that is, yeah, so that's how it was. And I just said, compartmentalised God, and God was there, and all the other stuff was somewhere else in my life, you know. So that's the basic where I'm coming from. Well, eventually, my wife and I finished up at Soham, and we went along to the Baptist church there. And while we were at the Baptist church, I met some genuine Christians. You know, the real people who really believe what they thought, what we taught, you know. And the minister really loved the Bible. He preached the Bible. And in the course of time, thinking about, you know, just looking at it all, I became a Christian. It was through John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, of all things, reading a book, that really nailed it for me. I became a Christian. I believed that Jesus was God's son and that he'd come to die for my sins and that he'd taken away my sins and I could be accepted by God. Right, so that's where I was. So I'm an evolutionist, yes, in one compartment, and I'm a believer in God in the other compartment. But I really did believe in God now. Right, I wasn't doing deals with God anymore. It was him that made the decisions about me. Right, so I've got that. So I'm an evolutionist and I believe in God. So I just want to encourage people, you know, if you meet people who call themselves Christians, and it looks like they genuinely are, and yet they believe in evolution, it is possible. It is possible to do that. And the reason it's possible is, probably like me, as they are, I didn't know one end of the Bible from another. Yeah? Didn't know one end of the Bible from another. And when our friends, the Christians, you know, started talking about this bit of the Bible and that bit of the Bible, my wife and I would look at each other and, what are they talking about? Yeah? Well, okay, so that's where we were. And then I met one of the chaps at church was a teacher of science at one of the village colleges, and he was an interesting man and a gentleman in many ways, and he just sort of probed a few things, you know, and asked a few questions. And one of the things he was saying was about how life started. You know, the basic position that evolution thinks is this, that it's by chance, pure chance, that some chemicals came together. Give it enough time and enough chance, it'll happen. That's how they think, yeah? Enough time, time and chance is the answer to everything, basically. Right? So, my dear friend said that he'd got a tin of Heinz soup. Yeah? Have you ever been converted by a tin of Heinz soup? Well, this is how it happened, yeah? A tin of Heinz soup. He said, now Dennis, he says, do you know that all the ingredients for life are in that tin of soup? It's true, isn't it? I mean, it's made out of living stuff, it's been all mashed up and boiled up, but it's all living stuff that was in there, in the tin of soup. He says, now then Dennis, if we left that on the shelf for how many decades, years, centuries, thousands, what's the chances of something coming out of that tin alive? He was challenging my thinking about this time and chance. Yeah? And in fact, I mean, since I've come to discover there are statisticians who are not believers, who really are convinced that time and chance doesn't do it. Right? I won't go into all the details. I'm not really there to say that this morning. So he got me thinking. Right? He got me thinking about that. Right? So it began to sort of question all those ideas that I come up with. And then, having done that, it began to make me think about what I'd done in my genetics. Genetics was all about butterflies and moths and insects and creatures and all of those things that I looked. How they pass on their genes to the next generation. That's not evolution, that's genetics, yeah? And the classic example, just share with you, the classic example is the moth, the white moth that became a black moth, yeah? During the Industrial Revolution, the white moth used to hide itself on trees, you know, on silver birches and things like that, and it blended in with its camouflage beautifully. And then along came the Industrial Revolution, and we poured out all this smoke everywhere, you know, and blacked everything up. And then the poor old moth stands out like a sore thumb on the darkened trees. Yeah? So the birds picked it off. And there are, I don't know if you know this, but there are occasionally darker types of the white moth. And so the darker ones survive more than the white ones. And so the white moth turned to black moths during the Industrial Revolution. Yeah? So that's counted as evolution. Right? Well, I thought that then, but he's still a moth. Did you notice that? He's still a moth. Yeah. It's called adaptation. There are adaptations all over the place. Genetics does that, yes? It takes what's available and works it around to fit better. Yeah, that's adaptation. I didn't think that at the time, but that's what it was. Yeah. But just one little PS to that story is, since we've started cleaning up the air, do you know what's happened to the black moth? It's the white moth. Isn't that funny? Right, yes. So it's still the white moth here. What's in the first place? So that was my genetics. Beginning to rethink everything. And there was one occasion that I look back now and I thought, wow, we never saw it at the time. It was all to do with resistance to antibiotics. And one of my lecturers was giving a grand talk to all the students in the science section, really. And he's saying is, what we need to do, because, you know, bugs develop resistance to antibiotics. We know that, don't we? Yeah? That's mutation type stuff. It's how we develop our immune systems. You know, you get something and you produce a defence to it. Well, bugs do the same. Right? And so, when they get an antibiotic, the bug eventually, very rarely, one in a million mutations, most of them are bad. Occasionally might be something that's useful to the bug. Yeah. Well, what he said was this. What we need to do is we need to get three antibiotics that work differently. Three different kinds of antibiotics, and we mustn't use them until we've got three. Yeah? And the point being was that the chances of adapting to one antibiotic, not too bad. Adapting to two antibiotics is pretty tough, but adapting to three antibiotics is impossible. They won't do it. Yeah? So save the three antibiotics until you've got three good ones, and then blast every disease that you come across with bugs in, and you'll finish them off. Great! And we all thought, wow, that's really good. Only one problem is the drug companies won't hold on to the drug if they can sell it now. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Waiting for three is not going to happen. But good theory. Yeah? Well, we thought, fantastic. And then as a Christian, now I'm a Christian and I'm thinking differently. God's turned the light on. You notice? Yeah? As a Christian, I'm looking back at that now and thinking, wow, he's just undermined the theory of evolution. Because for you to work, you don't need three mutations, dear friends. You need thousands. Yeah? So multiply the chances of 1,000 by 1,000 by 1,000 by, you'll get nothing. That's what the statisticians were saying, is the probability of evolving something is zero. Right? So, I didn't know that at the time. But once I became a Christian, the light began to trickle into my head. And then lastly, this was while I was still a young Christian. I didn't know much of the Bible or anything. I went to hear a man called Professor Werner Wright. He's gone to the Lord now, but he's an amazing man. He was professor of biophysics at Leeds University, of all things. And he came to give a talk on creation at Ely RAF Hospital when it was open in those days. And somehow I got invited to go there. And he's talking away. And his speciality was about bone structures and things like that. Yeah. And the point he was making was that to walk on all fours is fine, and to walk upright is fine, but to get from down there to up there requires you to go through a period in the bone structure which is totally unstable. It will not happen, because if it's unstable, it will be selected out. Yeah? Right. So his argument was, to get from crawling around to standing upright, it's not going to work. Yeah, that was his argument, yes? But the thing that really struck me was this, and it was true in my case. He said this, I am convinced that no one will believe in the creation until they get to know the Creator. That was my experience. I'm just assuming, I mean, they're not stupid people, you know, evolutionists. You know, they're not stupid. But they haven't got the light. Right? And it wasn't because I'm clever. God opened my eyes to see the mistakes that were being made. There were other books and other stuff I've come across and sort of strengthened my understanding in these things. But that's what really twisted it for me. I became a believer in Jesus. I got to know the God who made it all. And now, instead of God being the God of the gaps, you know, can God get less when you get to know more? The more I get to know, God gets bigger. Yeah. He's not the God of the gaps. He's the God of the lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what a change. And it's not because I'm clever. Yeah, you think, I've been to university, I've gone to the best university in the country. Apart from these Oxford people, you know, but, yeah, okay, right. But, having said that, and I have some of the finest lecturers I've ever known, it's not because I'm smart. God did something through that wonderful message about Jesus that turned the light on. So, when you hear people going on very strongly about evolution, yeah, don't get too upset, yeah. It's because they haven't seen the light.
Yeah.
Yeah? They haven't seen the light. I mean, Richard Dawkins says, you know, show me the evidence. The evidence is in front of his eyes, but he can't see it. I couldn't either, until God opened my eyes. Okay.